Happy New Year, everyone, and welcome into Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on Crack Sidewalks. Hope everyone had a Merry Christmas. Phil, Big East play is finally here. Are you excited? Looking forward to it?
I'm not as excited as I was at the beginning of the season, given how this season's gone to date, but I'm still pretty excited to get some conference basketball in and see how the new Big East pans out.
Yeah, maybe expectations have been lowered a little bit, but no matter how low you get on Marquette, at least they are not champion Baptist.
Well, that is true. We have been known to score more than 12 points in an entire game.
Yeah, for those who have not heard by now, Southern University, who Marquette defeated to open the season, beat something called Champion Baptist College 116-12 on Monday night. Yes, they won by 104 points.
Right, so it was basically like our loss to Ohio State on Jose Canseco-type steroids.
More or less. Something like that. It's like the Grambling State win for Marquette, but way, way worse. If Grambling, it would have been like that game if Grambling scored one basket every 3.5 minutes.
Yeah, and it was like 36-0 so to start the game. So, but yeah. Anyway, this isn't exactly Champion Baptist podcast. I don't think they have one, I'm guessing.
No, I just want to, you know, keep things in perspective as we enter the new year. And hopefully 2014 is better to Marquette than the last half of 2013 was. First half of 2013 was actually quite good to Marquette.
Yes.
Big East Championship, a trip to the Elite Eight, and hopefully more of that as Marquette kind of turns the corner hill. Since we last had a podcast, Phil, Marquette, really more of the same. A win against a bad team, Samford, a disappointing loss against a good team in New Mexico. Have your any opinions on Marquette changed for you in the last week?
I think it was Anonymous Eagle had something about it was Paint Touches did a review of their predictions to date, and one of the things that stood out is they were talking about leadership and their prediction on leadership, and I think the team is talented enough. My opinion, I thought they were just not a good enough team, but I think they're good enough. But Paint Touches pointed out that every game we lost was A, to a very good team, and B, we were within easy shouting distance with 2 or 3 minutes to go in each of those games and just couldn't close it out. We were tied with New Mexico, we were down, or tied with San Diego State, down to New Mexico 1, down to Madison by 3 points with 2:08 to go in the game. So the team's got the talent, clearly. They just haven't found a way to close out games. So I think that's the big revelation to me, is that the team might actually be better than they've performed to date. They just haven't put the pieces together.
Yeah, close losses really, I mean, close only counts in horseshoes and hand grenades. The selection committee is going to give Marquette any bonus points for close losses. They've got to start getting some wins here as we get into Big East play. What we're going to do in the podcast today, we're going to revisit some of our predictions as far as game by game for the Big East and kind of go through the Big East schedule again now that we've kind of have a vague idea of what everyone in the Big East is like as we enter this new era of the Big East. But one thing I do want to touch on before we get going on that, one player that we've been speculating about all year, are we going to see him, are we not? It looks like now, officially, we will not see Dwayne Wilson this year. Disappointing to hear that official news, but certainly not unexpected, Phil.
No, it is disappointing, but at this point, you know, when he had first suffered the injury, okay, maybe he can come back in a couple of weeks. Once it got to mid to late December and he wasn't back, it's nearly unprecedented for a first-year college freshman to contribute in any way. So this theoretically, barring another injury, guarantees him 4 years of full eligibility. And, oh, by the way, he kind of gets this year free in terms of practicing. He's now getting up, you know, he's going to play against all the players in practice and stuff like that. So, he'll kind of be a super freshman next year. So,
I wouldn't say it's unprecedented for a college freshman to contribute in any way. I would say maybe it's that way at Marquette, where there aren't many NBA prospects coming in as freshmen.
Well, I mean to miss the first 2 months of the season. Yeah, there's certainly college freshmen, some really, really good players there who are typically one-and-done type players that couldn't contribute. But I don't think there was any reason to suspect that he was going to contribute at this stage. So taking the red shirt, if it's what's best for the team and his family, then by all means. It's disappointing. It means Derek Wilson is the guy. So we're going to have to – he's going to have to figure out a way to make an entry pass to the post. That's about all I know.
Yeah, I think certainly by now we had hoped to see some significant progress with Derek Wilson as a scorer. You know, he's picked his spots and been able to slash to the basket, but I don't know. I'd like to see a shot chart. I don't know how many baskets he's made, like, beyond 10 feet, and I'm not trying to be sarcastic. I'm, like, honest. Like, I don't know how many jump shots he's even made this year.
I can think of two.
Yeah, he just doesn't shoot them, and I know that's not his forte, but it would be nice to have that ability to stretch the defense a little bit. And you're right, the offense just really doesn't have any kind of flow with him at the point. And he did get a quick hook in that
Samford game.
In the Samford game, right. And I mean, he brought in Todd Mayo, but, you know, Derek came back and played. But, you know, it was kind of a blowout game. It's really kind of hard to judge the team because obviously the rotations in those games are much different than they are in the games that are close. And it's particularly with the freshmen as well. The freshmen just don't play in the close games, and that's something maybe I'll touch on as we go through Big East play, is you know, whether it's a trust issue with Buzz or whether the freshmen just aren't earning their minutes to go into those close games, whatever it is. You know, Johnson and Burton, they just don't play when the game's close, and I hope we see them against Creighton, but I just really can't be too optimistic that we're going to see very much of those guys. And that's another reason why I guess I'm okay with Dwayne Wilson going ahead and redshirting, because if, you know, if Johnson and Burton, as well as they've played in their spot time, can't get minutes in close games, then I think Dwayne Wilson probably had zero hope of seeing the floor at all in Big East play.
Right, I totally agree with that. And this is a point of frustration for me. I get the whole, you know, Buzz's philosophy is, you know, you practice, like, if you want to start, you got to, you know, you earn in practice. I get that. I'm on board. I also understand that his philosophy is you're not going to be getting serious minutes until you can prove yourself on the defensive end. I get that. But just watching Juwan Johnson and especially Deontay Burton on the floor, you cannot tell me that they don't make Marquette's team better or our chances of winning better. At what point do you take the training wheels off and you have to and say, we have to live and die with these players? Listen, I want Todd Mayo. He's got all the talent in the world. I want him to be our best shooting guard. He hasn't gotten there. You know, at some point, we've got to take the training wheels off and say, all right, let's live and die by a couple of these freshmen. And if we lose, well, we were probably going to lose anyway. And if nothing else, we're building for next season. You know?
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Just kind of bouncing off what you were saying there. You know, I totally get what Buzz, you know, his philosophy is. You got to earn your time, and that's the standard that's set in the practice, and he doesn't want to start spoiling players by just handing them playing time or starts or anything. But I think at some point, I know this isn't ideal, but I think at some point you have to realize maybe you have an Allen Iverson type attitude on your team with a guy who maybe doesn't give you everything you need in practice, but he's going to give you everything you need in a game. And I know that's not ideal, but sometimes you just got to realize, all right, I need to push him harder in practice and maybe he'll get it, but I know he's going to give me what I need when I put him in this game. And I'm not saying maybe those guys are divas, but maybe that is a situation. Maybe they just don't practice hard enough the way Buzz wants them to, but I think they bring it when it's game time. And I think if you just put Todd Mayo in there a little more and maybe Juwan Johnson and Burton too, I think good things will happen. Even if they have deficiencies on the defensive end, particularly the freshmen, I think they will make up for it with what they bring to the offense, because I think the offense has a little more flow when those guys are in the game because they're able to create their own shots, particularly Burton. Burton may be able to create for himself better than anyone on the team when you think about it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he can play post. He's got a jump shot. We haven't seen him shoot from range. Probably won't this season. I guarantee you Buzz has probably got a lid on that. He's not going to shoot from three. But he's got a nice little jumper, and so he's on the offensive end. He's certainly going to help free up some time or free up some space for some other players. Because one of the big things is everybody just sags off. I mean, the only guy that's shown consistently he can shoot the three is Jake Thomas, but he's also no drive threat, so they're going to go over the screens on him and under the screens on everybody else. Derek Wilson can't seem to feed the post, so Burton and Jameel Wilson may be the two offensive guys that can really, you know, stir the drink, and I just that's got to be worth something that you're willing to give up on the defensive end,
right? And I don't know if we'll experiment with all, because there aren't going to be many games to experiment with in Big East play, because as much as I hate to admit it, I think a lot of even some of the teams at the bottom may be a lot closer to Marquette than we would like to believe. I don't think there's going to be many games in Big East play where Marquette's blowing out anyone.
No, I don't think so either.
I mean, there are only three teams in the Big East with an RPI worse than 100, and unfortunately, as we talk right now, Marquette is one of them. DePaul, Marquette, and Seton Hall. They're 100, 108, and 155, respectively. Everyone else is 63 or better. Not that that's the end-all, be-all of the RPI, but that's just what the numbers say right now.
Well, and I think the Big East is ranked as the third-best conference of all the conferences. So it's not going to be easy. There's no gimmies.
Right. And that seems a little high to me, I guess, just a gut feel. I guess maybe it's more of an eyeball test with me. I would say, you know, just I would think the ACC, Big 12, Pac-12, maybe the American and the Big Ten would probably all be better conferences, but if that's what the numbers say, that's what the numbers say, and hopefully the computers are kind to Marquette when the season's said and done and they have enough wins to get them into the tournament. Because, you know, there's a lot of season to play, and Marquette can certainly get better and get some nice wins in conference play, but there's no doubt, as we speak right now, Marquette is staring squarely at the NIT.
Oh, absolutely. There is no reason, based on the current results, there is no reason that we should even be holding our breath on Selection Sunday right now. We would definitely be out if the team continues to perform as it has, which would be atrocious, but hey, that's where we live. But again, that's why, you know, unless we're seeing a significant change, that's why I don't understand why we don't just ride the freshmen and mix it up, because, you know, there's nothing that we've done to date that has been wildly successful, so, you know, why not try a little bit something else? I don't know.
Yeah, we'll see. Well, let's start going through some of the conference play as we kind of revisit that. But I guess first thing we'll do is maybe talk about the Creighton game, since that is the game that is most pressing. That's coming up on New Year's Eve. That'll be the part of a which hopefully is going to be a really exciting showcase for the Big East on Fox Sports 1. I hope it gets some decent ratings.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously it's going up against probably college football parts of the day, but still, it's for basketball fans, and I hope it's good for FS1 and the Big East. But this all-day marathon, I hope a lot of people watch it. I'm going to try to watch as much as I can. But and so I'll certainly watch the Marquette game, thankfully for me, because I have to work. It's the last game of the night.
Yeah,
but,
well, you know, I have the day off, and I have two TVs, so I shouldn't be distracted by bowl games.
Oh, good for you. But this may be the toughest game in Big East play, though, for Marquette to open up with, is going to Creighton to start this one. It's going to be a crazy crowd. Creighton is top five in all of the NCAA in attendance right now this year, and they're a solid team. Amazingly, they have a loss to George Washington, who Marquette blew out, if you want to look at common opponents. But it's hard for me to feel too good about Marquette going into this game.
What do you mean, this is the toughest of the day or toughest of Marquette's entire conference season?
The toughest of Marquette's entire conference season.
Yeah, that and or at Villanova. Maybe
at Villanova too.
Yeah. But yeah, it's going to be a tough one. The Creighton crowd is silly good. I mean, I guess not to disparage Omaha, but there's not much else going on in the winter. So they get good crowds. They got Doug McDermott. You know, Jamil Wilson has got a bum knee. I've seen everything. Everything seems to indicate he's okay to play. He's just got a sprained knee, but if you don't have Jamil Wilson, I don't know who guards Doug McDermott from Marquette. It's not going to be Otula, or it's not going to be Devontae. You know, we saw how that worked out with Sam Decker. So it's going to be a really tough game. I'm cautiously optimistic about it. I cannot explain why. It could be, you know, early New Year's Eve drinking. But it's going to be a real tough game. It's all going to come down to, and this is cliche, it's all going to come down to whether Creighton's hitting outside shots or not.
Yeah. My biggest concern is simply the fact that Marquette has yet to pass a test, a really good test this year.
Right.
Any game that looked to be a real challenge, and, you know, I've kind of been lulled to sleep by the blowout wins over good teams. All right, maybe they're getting it together, but they haven't gotten it together. If you want to blame whatever, it was close. They almost had it. They're getting there. They're nearly close. But the New Mexico game really soured my thoughts on Marquette on the season, just because the way they let that game slip away. They made some very poor decisions late in that game. I mean, there were a lot of rush shots from quite a few guys, Devontae and Jamil in particular, and obviously they let Cullen Neal just shoot it all night. And if that happens, I think Marquette could get blown out of the gym in Omaha. I think it could get really ugly. But I'm I'm honestly thinking this is going to be a loss for Marquette to start the conference season, unfortunately. I had it as a loss when we went through our original Big East predictions back in the preseason, but it's hard for me to be optimistic. I don't think I can pick Marquette to win a tough game until they show me they can.
Yeah, I agree with that. The only thing that I come back to is it. I don't think it's going to be the same, but it feels like and the years blend together, but it was the year Jimmy Butler, I just remember it vividly. I think you were actually up here in Milwaukee for the game, but Jimmy Butler hit a shot against Cincinnati to win the game. I remember it because they were playing that Miley Cyrus Party in the USA song, and for some reason that was Jimmy Butler's jam back then, and he hit the game-winning shot. But that was the first – we had played a bunch of close games and had never gotten over the hump, and that was the first game we got over the hump of actually winning one of those tight ones. At some point, you know, you can make the argument that we've had enough of these nail-biters in these close games that we should be experienced enough to say, okay, I made that mistake there, I made that mistake there, let's not make that mistake in this game. And maybe that, you know, I haven't followed Creighton enough, maybe that experience gives us the opportunity. Just to be different, I'm going to say that we win at Creighton, but, you know, it's a 51-49. We're either going to win in a tight game or Creighton's going to walk over us 15, 17 points, something like that.
Yeah, if I have to go official score on my prediction, I'm going to say Creighton wins about 70-55. I just think Marquette is just – I think there's too much to fix, and I'd be surprised if it's fixed yet. And I don't like the matchup with McDermott. I don't like going on the road for Marquette because they haven't played well on the road anywhere or anywhere away from the Bradley Center. So the recent – and my concern is that we will not see very much of Johnson or Burton, which has also been the case in some of the losses. I don't know if they've earned any more time, but maybe it's just – maybe you could say maybe – and that's more about the opponents. That's why they don't play, and that's why they lose those games. But the fact is when those guys don't play – Marquette doesn't score as much.
Right. So. Yeah, the offense bogs down. And, you know, and Creighton, you can make the argument Creighton's an offensive team. They're not very good on the defensive end. And Marquette could go with their best defensive lineup. But, you know, Creighton's best defense is going to be Marquette's stodgy offense, you know, if you do that. So, it's going to be a tough one. I think Creighton's going to probably come up with enough points to win. But we'll see. That's why they play the games.
That is why. But now what we're going to do is go past Creighton and look down the road to the rest of Big East play as we enter this new league, and which is exciting as far as the new league beginning, but maybe a little concerning for Marquette because I'm not sure if they're ready for the challenge. Hopefully they prove me wrong. I would love to be wrong about this and go back and eat crow on this podcast, but I'm approaching this quite pessimistically. But we're going to go through and kind of re-predict how we think Marquette is going to do in the Big East without having to make you go back and listen to the previous podcast. I'll just simply tell you the first time around when we did this in the preseason, Phil had Marquette at 15-3 in the Big East. I had Marquette at 13-5. Phil's record probably would have Marquette winning the Big East, maybe second place at worst. Mine would probably be, I don't know, second or third, fourth at the worst, but certainly in the discussion for the NCAA tournament and maybe fighting for the Big East title down the road. But we're going to go through it again, Phil, and kind of go game by game and see what our record predictions are for Marquette now as we go back through the Big East. Ready?
Yeah, and just to preface this, I did a little, once again, I did as little preparation for this as possible, but I just kind of did some mind math, and my analysis on this will be based on who I think the top four teams in the Big East are going into the conference season, and what should be no shock, Marquette is not one of those top four teams.
Yep, I certainly don't think Marquette is one of the top four teams right now either. All right, let's go game by game. We just went through with Creighton. I went on the record with a loss. You sounded...
I'm going to say win.
Okay, you say they start with a big win, which would be so huge.
Right.
You know, with Marquette in these past few years, when we're writing the team bubble watch label, seems like when Marquette gets that first big win, it's just such a relief off the team's shoulders, and they loosen up, and like now then they get comfortable. I remember, what was it, when they got that 11 seed that one year, I think they went to Connecticut and got a huge win at Connecticut.
Yeah.
And it was like,
yeah,
once they finally got that, it was like, oh, finally we got one. Now we're set. Now we're going to get going. And whenever the earlier that big win comes, the better it's going to be for Marquette. So if it is Creighton, and I hope you're right, if it is Creighton, then I'll suddenly get real optimistic about this team. But I have it as a loss. Then the next game for Marquette is going to be Saturday the 4th, which would be home against DePaul. Your thoughts on that one, Phil?
I'm going to go with a win. It is DePaul.
Pessimistic Joe also has win. So I would have him at 1-1 at this point. Next one is going to be Xavier, which would be the following Thursday. Xavier, actually, a decent record for this point in the season. Maybe kind of picked down the Big East. They're 10-3, including a win over Cincinnati. Can Marquette go get a win at X?
I think Xavier is feisty. I also think, again, if we win at Creighton, this team gets a little ahead of itself. I actually have at Xavier as a loss.
Pessimistic Joe also has this one as a loss, losing at Xavier. Then I have Marquette coming back home, beating Seton Hall, which is currently, the as far as the RPI is concerned, and record-wise, I guess, well, Marquette might have the worst record at 8-5. Seton Hall is 9-4 on the year. At home against Seton Hall, I have as a win, though.
Well, and in all seriousness, is Eugene Teague, like, alive? Is he still going to play?
Like, I have no idea.
Because he had a huge fall and, like, hit his head and, like, was having a seizure on the court, and they carted him off.
Right.
So I hadn't seen anything. Without Teague, we win in a Champions Baptist-type way. with him, I definitely think we win, especially at home.
Yeah, I got Marquette winning that one as well. Then this is one I waffled back and forth on. I ultimately settled. I guess I changed it late and said win the first time around. But going, this is the tough stretch in the Marquette schedule, really. Back-to-back tough road games, really only a couple games apart. At Butler on the 18th of January, and then at Georgetown 2 games later. I am actually going double loss on this one, Phil. Just the first road trip to Butler, who is typically Butler. I mean, they're tough. They're going to be feisty, and I think it's going to be a tough road environment. I got them losing at Butler and then losing at Georgetown as well.
I struggled on this one because I wanted to put Butler into my top four in the Big East, but I couldn't do that. At Butler is tough, and maybe I'm thinking optimistically because I honestly think if we lose at Butler and at Georgetown, the wheels totally come off. You know, we're looking ahead because then we've got Villanova at home. That could be a 3-game losing streak.
Right.
So I waffled on this one, but I said that we win at Butler.
Okay, and then Georgetown?
That is going to be a big loss.
Yeah, I have that as a loss as well. And so then I'm getting really wheels spinning out of control on the next one. I have Marquette then losing at home to Villanova as well. I do have that potentially doomsday scenario of a 3-game losing streak early in conference play. Because that's, like I said earlier, until Marquette tells me and shows me they can beat good teams, I can't predict them to beat good teams, even at home. So I have Marquette losing at home to Villanova.
I think that's an entirely rational and reasonable conclusion. The thing is, I watched the Nova Cuse game. I've watched Nova a fair amount, frankly, because they've been the best team in the Big East to date. I do think they are the number one team in the Big East right now, but I think they're very susceptible. They're hot and cold on the shooting. They're a shooting team, which tends to be a Marquette weakness. But at home, again, maybe being overly optimistic, I think they have some shooting issues, and for whatever reason, we're able to pull it together, and that would be a win for us, is what I'm saying. Well,
love the optimism, Phil. I really hope you're right. I really hope you just crush me in these predictions when we go back at the end of Big East play. All right, next game is Marquette's going to be at home against Providence. I have that one as a win.
I do as well.
Yep. And then the game after that is what should be an exciting time. Marquette is going to go to Madison Square Garden and play St. John's. That's, of course, Super Bowl weekend. It's going to be part of that doubleheader. Yep. When Georgetown's playing Michigan State in that doubleheader, which would be great for the conference as a whole if they could get that win to maybe boost the conference profile a little bit. But big showcase in Madison Square Garden against St. John'sville. I have it as a loss.
Oh, I have it as a big loss. This is kind of the combination of all of Marquette's bugaboos. National television, all eyes on us, road game, Madison Square Gardens, big lights, and we pooped the bed.
I think that's very fair.
I think the only way it's possibly worse is if we're also wearing the baby blues during this game.
Yes. Thankfully, the thing is, Marquette in the baby blues, I guess it wasn't at Madison Square Garden, though. I think Jimmy Butler broke the baby blues curse with a buzzer beating win against St. John's.
That's true.
If I remember, so
that was that was the end of the last season, two seasons ago.
Yeah, it was his senior year.
Yeah.
So yeah, but I say go ahead and wear the baby blues, just go for broke and see what happens.
Maybe if we go with the quadruple redundant curse, it cancels out somehow.
Yeah, who knows? And hey, maybe for your sake, Phil, the Packers will be playing. And hey, maybe for my sake, too, maybe it'll be Packers and Chiefs in the Super Bowl the next day.
Wouldn't that be terrific? Man, we would not talk to each other for a little bit.
Yeah, it would be a very contentious podcast, but we'll deal with that when we get to it.
It wouldn't get Chicago Bear fan ugly, but it wouldn't be pleasant for a little bit.
Yeah, I don't expect the Chiefs to make it that far, but we'll deal with that when we get there.
I don't expect the Packers to make it far either.
All right, moving on. Let's get back on track. At home against Butler following the debacle in the Garden, finally Marquette. I have Marquette coming home and beating Butler. And then I have actually Marquette a little three-game winning streak here. I have Marquette beating Butler, going on the road and beating Seton Hall, and then getting Xavier at home.
I have that same three-game winning streak. I had us losing to Xavier when we were at Xavier. I was almost going to call the Xavier game a loss for us because it's National Marquette game, Marquette Day, and I have no statistical evidence of whatsoever. But I feel like we don't play very well on National Marquette Day. We should probably stop having that.
I think maybe you're confusing it with Senior Day. Marquette always plays poorly on Senior Day.
Yes, you're right.
That's for sure. But I don't know if I don't think there's any statistical trend on National Marquette Day. But by the way, that game has actually been moved from Fox Sports 1 to Big Fox.
Yeah.
So that'll be exciting. So yeah. National Marquette Day will truly be national. So that'll be good.
Yes, but I do have us beating Butler, winning at Seton Hall, and beating Xavier at home.
I do too. So hopefully Marquette getting some momentum at this point of the season, maybe figuring things out. But then they get Creighton again, and Creighton coming to the Bradley Center. And again, it's the good teams thing, and I have Marquette losing at home to Creighton.
I actually have us winning two again, winning the second one against Creighton. I think at home, night game, it'll be a good game for Marquette in that one.
All right, next game would be at DePaul, which is, of course, Marquette's house of horrors. Marquette seems to always just save its worst performance every year for when they go at DePaul. Sometimes they get away with it, other times they haven't. But I have Marquette getting away with it this time and Marquette beating DePaul.
I actually, with the Creighton and Georgetown games at home, cramming that DePaul game in between, I think the house of horrors gets worse. I actually think we lose this one.
Oh, that would be brutal.
Oh, God. It would be the worst thing, but I've seen it happen too many times that the team just struggles mightily. And the fact, like I said, that, if it was something, if we were playing Creighton at DePaul and then, Seton Hall, I wouldn't be as concerned. But sandwiching those two, very difficult games that are must win for the RPI, I just foresee a let up against DePaul.
Yeah. Hopefully that's not the case, but that's the one game that's the first time that I have a win and you have a loss so far, I think, as we've gone through this Big East play. But the next game is Georgetown at home, which, this would be a big bubble team game, because I think both Marquette and Georgetown are going to be fighting for their tournament lives all throughout Big East play. I have Marquette actually beating Georgetown, though, at home.
I do have that as well. Foreshadowing, I think Marquette makes its, at the back end of the season here, makes its typical, hey, don't forget about us, we don't suck as much as you think run.
I'm working on a cleverer name. Yeah, we'll work on that. Hopefully we get that, solidified before we get to late February. But the next game is going to be the big one. This is the maybe besides playing at Creighton, this is the one chance to get a huge, huge tournament-boosting win going to Villanova. And I guess we still don't know where that game's going to be, if it's going to be on campus or if it's going to be at
Wachovia Center.
Yeah, Wachovia Center. But regardless, at Villanova is always tough, and unfortunately I do have it as a loss.
And this isn't going to be a fair answer, because I do think whether it's at the Wachovia or I think it's not Pauley Pavilion, wherever it is, if it's on campus, I think we lose. That bandbox always scares me. If we're playing in the Wachovia Center, I think we win. So I'm going to assume we're playing in the bigger venue and that we're going to win.
Oh, all right. So you got a W. But yeah, the Pavilion is the on-campus at Villanova. But I have it regardless. As long as it's in the city of Philadelphia, I have it as a loss.
As long as we're playing Villanova, it's a loss.
Yes. So that's where – Good news is that's the end of my pessimism, is that's the last loss I have for Marquette. The last two games are at Providence and then St. John's at home. I have Marquette beating Providence on the road, and then hopefully a win on Senior Day, which will be an emotional day for sure, as it'll be the last game for Otule, Gardner, Jameel Wilson, and Jake Thomas.
Well, that Otule montage on St. John, we'll need an extra hour and a half just to cover all 6 years of his time.
And whoever promotions at the Bradley Center, like Marquette, tissues would be just terrific for that game.
Well, and tissues that say Dr. Otule would be appropriate. I actually, and this is why I was foreshadowing, I think after the debacle at DePaul, which is kind of an interesting name, I do see us winning all four to end the season, making that late push. I still think we're going to have to win two or three in the conference tournament to be even considered, but I do think we win at Providence and St. John's.
Well,
So what's the tally?
Doing the math here, you have Marquette at 14-4 in conference play, which is just one worse than you had predicted in the preseason. The big switch was you originally had them at Villanova as a loss, and you switched that to a win. And then you had two other games where you switched to losses. I actually have Marquette at 10-8 in the Big East.
Mm, so which would make them 18-16, right?
Yes, 18-13.
18-13, yeah.
That would be solidly in the NIT. No, like it wouldn't even be any drama if Marquette were to follow my path. Now, if they were to follow your path and end up at 22-9 with wins at Creighton and at Villanova, I think that would be enough. I think that would be fine.
Yeah, I mean we're looking at an 11 or 12 seed, but you know buzz is proven anywhere. I even with my path, which I will freely admit is probably too optimistic. There's probably at least one more bad loss in there somewhere that I'm not, you know. I think it's gonna. I honestly, you know, going game by game, it's difficult. I do think you're 10-8, and it's probably more like 13-5. You know, the 13-5 is the high end and 10-8 is the low end for this team. Mm-hmm. And anywhere in that bandwidth, you're going to need wins in the conference tournament or perhaps even win the tournament to right. get into the dance. So
the good news is the Big East tournament is much more winnable this year than it has been in last year. Because you know you don't have to go through Louisville and Syracuse and Pitt and Notre Dame or some combination of those teams to get to the tournament. I mean, it's going to be a 10-team tournament. So if you can get in the top four, you only have to win three games. There's no more five games in 5 days for the teams at the bottom. And so hopefully Marquette can be in a position where they don't have to win four games in 4 days. I guess they have to finish in the bottom four for that to happen without looking at a bracket. But the Big East tournament is much more winnable. So even if we go with pessimistic Joe's predictions of 10-8, Marquette could still play its way in and steal a bid by just getting hot at the right time and going to Madison Square Garden and getting a few wins. But the reason, of course, I've been so pessimistic, as I said earlier, I just want to see Marquette get some good wins and finish games against some good teams before I get all optimistic and say, oh, well, you know, they're just going to put it together and it's going to be fine, because I'm just not convinced that it is going to be fine as we speak right now.
Yeah, I think what I'm depending on is kind of the concept of, again, like I said back at the beginning of the podcast, that all the games that they've lost, which is probably the most frustrating thing, of all the games they lost, they were competitive in those games, whether it felt like it at the time or not. At the ends of the game, they were within striking distance. There were no games where we got blown out. So if the team can continue that kind of performance, but figure out how to close out a game in the last 3 to 4 minutes, then I think they can go on a roll and do some things. That's the big question for me. Will they be able to develop that killer instinct? Again, and this is why I go back to, I think that's what's going to be telling is how many minutes on average in conference play Deontay Burton and Juwan Johnson have. Mm-hmm. I think if Deontay Burton has more than 15 minutes a game and Juwan Johnson has more than 10 or 15 minutes a game, we might be looking at...
I would like to see him north of 15 for sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, because otherwise you're looking at Johnson and Mayo should be getting the lion's share at the two. And
absolutely.
And Buzz has shown a proclivity to go to a three-guard lineup, because Steve Taylor is still hobbled apparently. So, whether Steve Taylor comes back or not, we're going to be playing three, so Mayo sometimes plays the three, and so there's minutes to be had, but I think if Juwan Johnson and Burton can get more than 15 minutes and Jake Thomas has less than 15 minutes, by that metric, I think we'll likely be having a good season. But Buzz knows the team better than I did do. So I'm just a guy on an internet podcast. So what do I know?
Right. Who knows if we're right? But my gut feeling is just like along you said, and it's not to say that Jake is holding the team down himself. It's just that the way the offense takes shape when those quicker, more athletic guys who can get their own shots are in there, the offense just looks better. And maybe it's on Derek Wilson too. And maybe if maybe we see Buzz experimenting with Todd Mayo playing the one and a backcourt of Mayo and Johnson to go with, Juan Anderson and Jameel Wilson, and then whoever, either Gardner and Otule in the middle. But I just would like to see some guys who can create a little more for everyone else, and guys who are going to make everyone else better, and guys that don't depend on other people to get their shot. Because Jake, he's shooting a decent percentage, to be honest, from three. But sometimes he's chucking it from like 25 or 30 feet, and it's going in, but that doesn't mean it's a good shot. I guess I'd just like to see a little more flow to the offense, and obviously Johnson and Burton bring that. And by the way, we haven't talked about it, but just briefly, how awesome was that dunk by Burton? I mean, come on.
All 16 people in the Bradley Center for that game stood up and screamed. It was great. It was the best, other than I spent a fair amount of time thinking about it, other than the DJO putback, it was probably the best in-game Marquette dunk I've been at in person.
Yeah, the best dunk, I guess, just because the emotions of the game, the best Marquette dunk I've been seen in person was Wade dunking on Marquise Estill in the Elite Eight game. That's the best, maybe the best posterization I've ever witnessed. But Burton is way up there. I mean, he just baptized that poor kid, and just that kind of excitement and that energy is just what I love so much about Burton, and he does it as a rebounder as well. Yeah, maybe he's a little slow defensively, but he just does so much offensively. I just think he can be such an X factor, and I hope that he gets an opportunity, whether it's, whether it's, not to say that it's Buzz holding him back, maybe he's holding himself back. I don't know what goes on in practice, but honestly, I would love to see it. I would love to see a Marquette practice and see exactly why some guys play more than others, and just watch a whole practice and see who gets yelled at and who gets torn into. But from what I've seen in those blowout games, Burton has earned his time, and he should play a lot.
Yeah, well, and 2 points. First, I'm not kidding, and this is it speaks to the Burton excitement factor. When that lane opened up, when he was at the top of the key, I stood up before he even made his move, because I was just convinced something awesome was going to happen when he had all that space in front of him. Mm-hmm. Number two, especially now, it was late in the game against Samford, but he had a couple of defensive blocks, one of which led to a Juwan Johnson run out that led to a pretty nice dunk of his own for Johnson. That, were very athletic, good defensive plays. He got into position and anticipated. So I think the light bulb's starting to go on. Maybe it's wishful thinking, but he's gonna get there. But yeah, having Burton play is gonna be critical. And just to kind of circle back real quick, one last thing on Jake Thomas, and I think you touched on it a little bit. I'm not bagging on the kid and his talent. I think he's got fair talent. I think he does what he's supposed to. He's a good shooter. I just think if we're going to be really successful, we have to have talent perform above Jake Thomas's level. I think he's doing a great job for what he's being asked to do, but we've got to have a player that we can ask to do more than Jake's doing to be successful. And the last thing is, again, Derek Wilson, fine, if he can't shoot a jump shot, that's fine. I don't even really, I know I predicted him to be a double-digit scorer. Clearly, I don't know what I'm talking about. But Derek Wilson has got to find a way to take up that space when that player sags 10 feet off of him and find a way to feed the post, because Devontae Gardner has been, not from a player standpoint, but just from his productivity standpoint, has been probably one of the most disappointing players on the team this season, simply because I don't feel like he's the Devontae of the last 3 years. He's just not getting the buckets. I feel like he's not as involved in the offense as he has in the past years, and I think that comes down to not getting him involved with entry passes, and no one seems to be able to do it except Jameel Wilson.
Right, and that's a legit point. And maybe that's an opportunity where Dawson can show the coaches something in practice. If he can become a guy who can consistently get Gardner the ball, the opportunity is there for playing time. Because I don't think Buzz is married to Derek Wilson starting if he definitely sees he has a better option out there.
Well, yeah, I agree with that. I just don't think – I mean, I've seen Dawson play – I just have not seen enough out of Dawson. Again, I'm not bagging on him. I think he'll be a very serviceable point guard for Marquette over the coming years. I just don't see any way, and this kind of goes back to the Dwayne Wilson, I haven't seen any discernible glimmer out of Dawson that he's the answer at point guard. I think he's got talent, but it's so raw, and he looks lost on the defensive end. Either Derek Wilson's going to have to step up, or Jameel Wilson's going to have to play a lot of point guard, or we're going to have to find somebody like Mayo that can kind of start and have Derek Wilson not even play. And those are kind of the three options as I see them.
Yeah, and maybe I shouldn't have even brought up Dawson because, yeah, he probably is a ways away, but I'm still hesitant to have the Jameel Wilson as the point as an option just because I just think it weakens you on the perimeter and in the front court because I think he's got to play that 3-4 position, and you've got hopefully it's either Wilson's got to have a break. Derek Wilson either has to have a breakthrough, or you've got to see what Todd Mayo can do in, 30 minutes playing the point. Just see what happens. Granted, there probably would be – if that were to happen – I'm very ready to admit that Todd could have some games where he has double-digit turnovers. That's probably just going to happen. But he could also have some games where he's fantastic and it's totally worth it. So I guess you just have to see what happens.
Yeah, it's gonna be interesting. But I think what it comes down to is there's a couple of key players. Derek Wilson's one of them. Todd Mayo's another one. They have to step up and play better. And I think Buzz has to take the leashes off of Burton and Johnson and let them play and let them play extended minutes. Even if they don't play 15 minutes a game, get them a run of 8-9, maybe that's excessive, but get them a run of 4 or 5 minutes where they're out there playing, getting into the flow of the game and see what they're capable of doing.
Yeah, I guess the Creighton game is just going to be, I think it's going to be an early indicator as to what we're going to see throughout Big East play is, how much does Buzz trust these guys? Because if Johnson and Burton don't get minutes against Creighton, I can't see it changing much over the course of the next month and a half, 2 months.
Yeah, so, I 100% agree with that.
Yeah, so hopefully those guys get an opportunity, and hopefully they step up and don't disappoint. Because if they go out there and disappoint, well, then we're just going to go back. We're just going to keep having to deal with, six-man rotations in any close game, which I think has spelled the disaster for Marquette in the previous tough games, and I think would continue to be the case as they face some of the tougher teams in Big East play. A couple more thoughts as we wrap up our thoughts on the Big East. By the way, did you see, I guess it was on Twitter this week, that I hate to bring this up again, but poor Vander Blue looks like he's going to get cut by his team over there in Israel. Not to just continue to harp on what this season might have been if he were on this team, but gosh, Buzz really was counting on him being here. And gosh, as each day goes by, it just seems to be more and more just a brutal decision.
I still contend, from the Marquette standpoint, the decision was absolutely brutal. I still contend, I don't know that, and we can never prove this, if Vander had stayed, I don't know that the situation turns out any differently than it does the way it did. You know what I mean? I don't know.
You said he wouldn't have improved his stock as a pro.
Yeah, I don't think he would have been drafted. And I mean, I don't know that another year at Marquette would have improved his talent to the point where he's not getting cut by an Israeli team. So for purely selfish reasons, I think this team is a top 25 team if Vander's back, and that's maybe a wild understatement. But he could have played the point.
That's the thing, is he would be an option right now. He could be starting at the point and then improving his pro profile, and maybe think of the difference between junior and senior year for Jimmy Butler, Wesley Matthews, Jay Crowder, and Darius Johnson-Odom and Jarrell McNeil. significant differences for all those guys, especially Butler and especially Wesley Matthews. And I think one more year for Vanderbilt, it couldn't have hurt. Would he have been drafted and be on a pro NBA team? Probably not. Would he be more ready to be a pro somewhere? I think he would.
Oh, I absolutely agree. And I think just from his perspective, there was no reason to go this year. Again, because I look at it from the perspective of last year or this year, if he had gone, it would have ended up in the same result. So why not get another year at college on the off chance you improve yourself enough to get somebody to draft you? Plus, I mean, if you look at the way this team performed, they need a slasher. That would have been Vander. Vander would have stretched, you know, he wasn't a lights out shooter. He would have stretched the defense a little bit, though, and he could have been the point guard. Could you imagine Vander at the one, Mayo at the two? Let's go offensive, and say Jameel Wilson at the three. Let's say Burton at the three, Wilson at the four, and Gardner or Otule at the five. I mean, who stops that lineup?
Could I imagine it? I imagine it every day.
Right. I wake up screaming and crying every time I think about it.
Every time I see Marquette's starting lineup at the beginning of a game, I'm like,
yeah.
What if?
So from a Marquette perspective, it was a poor decision. From his standpoint, probably a poor decision. But, you know, I guess I'm not shocked because while I loved him in Marquette colors, I just always kind of got a sense that, you know, that this was the kind of decision he would kind of come to or whatever. So, I mean, it is what it is. We're not going to.
It is a bummer. We can't do anything about
right.
it now.
I just hope thing. I hope the best for him. That's it. That's,
yeah,
that's
I, yeah it. I hope he lands on his feet. And, you know, he's still only 21 years old. Maybe he can catch on somewhere and play ball somewhere or just find something else to do with his life and just be happy. But anyway, good luck to Vander out there. Hate it didn't work out for him as a pro player, at least not yet. One more thing I will say I'm going to keep an eye on. This could be a total non-story and be a total waste of 5 minutes on this podcast, but I just want to say this is something I'm going to keep an eye on. Luke Fisher, who is a 6'11 kid out of Germantown, Wisconsin, he was a top 100 prospect last year. He is transferring from Indiana, so he is currently looking for a home. I don't know if there's a possibility that he could land at Marquette, but I could not think of a more perfect fit for Marquette next year if he could be on the roster as a 6'11 kid who is a top 100 prospect with a little bit of experience at the college level.
Well, didn't he get hurt?
He did get hurt.
What was the injury? Do you remember?
I actually haven't looked into it that far.
Jameel McKay, who, once again, not to harp on it for the third podcast in a row, but are you thinking about your decision again? Because he would be getting minutes right now. But with McKay gone, isn't it theoretically a swap you can take Fisher for McKay?
See, the thing is, I actually had a slight Twitter discussion with Anonymous Eagle about this today, and he brought up some NCAA bylaws. And, of course, the NCAA is just the most well-run, most fair organization on planet Earth.
Tell me about it.
But the apparently, if a player, according to what I could be totally misreading it and totally wrong, but the way I understand it, if a player accepts a scholarship and is on scholarship and begins an academic year at a school, so he takes a class, then his scholarship cannot be given to anyone else for the rest of that year, even if he leaves at the semester. Fisher or anyone else could not theoretically take that scholarship for the spring semester. Now, Fisher could enroll and pay his own way for a semester or sit out and go, you know, take classes at a junior college and then enroll in the fall. But as far as could he enroll at Marquette and be practicing with the team as a transfer next week, no, I don't think he could do that.
I'm not sure how that would all work.
Yeah, because beyond that, Marquette does not have a scholarship available. Because remember when McKay announced he was transferring, we kind of in jest but kind of seriously asked if Marquette could just give that scholarship to Dylan Flood. And I guess that's why they haven't, because according to the rule, the way I read it, is once a player is on scholarship and if he leaves the school, after either the first day of classes or the first game, whichever comes earliest, then he counts as a scholarship player for the entire academic year. So technically, even though Marquette is not giving him any benefits or any, he's not taking classes at Marquette now or anything like that, he counts as Marquette's 13th scholarship player right now.
Well,
for this year.
Fisher could always transfer to Marquette, and he could, in theory, I think, because wasn't there a player for Georgetown or somebody like that that I think transferred from Arizona or Arizona State and got a waiver and was declared eligible right away?
Well, I mean, Josh Smith transferred from UCLA.
Is that what I'm thinking of?
Yeah, he was supposed to sit out all this year, but yeah, he transferred at semester last year and was eligible immediately in the fall for some inexplicable reason.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking of. So, I mean, once again, as you said, the NCAA, that bastion of fairness and
logic,
logic and intelligence. Just talked to Jay Billis. You know, has established a precedent, if you will. Though the term unprecedented is somewhat of a sensitive issue with me. So, you know, Fisher could transfer here. He might have to pay his own way for a semester, and then maybe he's eligible right away next year. The Lord knows we could use the height, and it would make sense. It'd be kind of a coming home. I don't know what he wants, but
yeah, like I said, this may be a total non-story. He may not even have any interest in Marquette. Marquette would be foolish to not have interest in him.
Right, I agree.
He may not have any interest, and it may not even be possible because of the scholarship situation. All I'm saying is I'm going to be watching it over the next 2 weeks to see where he lands.
Well, but
and if it happens to be Marquette, woohoo.
Well, I agree with that, but the other thing I'm thinking of, there are no – I mean, very rarely are there teams, especially high-level teams at this point, that have a scholarship available, right? I mean, so
yeah, like it's like David Kamichik, who brought this up to me, like he kind of chimed in on the conversation. He's a big time college basketball guru. For you guys who don't know who he is, he's a great follow on Twitter, by the way.
Yeah, very good I with enjoy bracketology. His tweets.
But anyway, he chimed in and said, "Well, what about McKay? Because obviously Iowa State's full on scholarship, but he's over there right now. So how's that work? I don't know if he's paying his own way for a semester at Iowa State or if there's some loophole. I don't even know how that all works. All I'm saying is I'm keeping an eye on it."
Right. So I guess the only reason I bring that up is, you know, us not having a scholarship available would not prevent Fisher from coming here. It would not put us at a competitive disadvantage because we'd be just in the same situation as every other team. It's just a question of whether we have a competitive advantage by being able to give Fisher McKay's scholarship.
Right. And as far as next fall is concerned, absolutely. Because Marquette, you know, technically Marquette is at the scholarship limit now with, but they only have a verbal from the Malik Harris kid who hasn't signed yet. And who knows what's going to happen with him. And I'm not saying he would definitely be the one who's not at Marquette next year, because as they say, those things work themselves out. Who knows how the scholarships would shake out. But all I'm saying is it's a very realistic possibility that it would totally happen that Fisher is at Marquette in the fall. But we'll just wait and see. Going to keep an eye on over the next 2 weeks. Maybe we bring it up in a future podcast if he ends up coming home to Marquette. But again, maybe he might not have any interest at all in Marquette. It just jumped out at me when I saw a 6'11 kid from Germantown, Wisconsin, is suddenly looking for a place to play, and I just cannot think of a better place.
No, I agree. We certainly don't want him going to that evil town to the west.
I would guess, I haven't know any of the details about his release from Indiana, but I would guess he would be prevent. I would guess he would be prevented from going to another Big Ten school.
I actually think the Big Ten has, like, the conference itself has a rule that you can't. Well, you can transfer, but it's a 2-year sit out.
Right.
Which who's going to do that?
Yeah, he definitely would not do that. Maybe he could go play for Champion Baptist.
Well, I hear they're looking for talent.
They could use 6'11", top 100.
And that kid's in the business is called a callback.
Everybody, thanks for listening to Scrambled Eggs here on Crack Sidewalks. As always, you can hit us up on Twitter. Comments, questions, want to tell us how dumb this hour was, what a waste of your time it was. I'm Joe McCann 3 on Twitter. Phil is MOOOF23. Of course, you can always tweet at Cracked Sidewalks. You can download this on iTunes and follow us on Facebook. You can like us there. That's where we post all the podcasts and let you know when we have a new one up. Phil, any final thoughts as we begin Big East play and begin 2014?
Nope. Just wishing everyone a happy new year and hope for a more positive result in the conference season.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. Happy New Year, everyone. Hope 2014 is seashells and balloons.